Hey there, welcome to LSAT Demon Daily. I'm Nathan Fox, that's Ben Olson. Together, we're the founders of LSATdemon.com and our weekly podcast, Thinking LSAT. We have an email here from Charles.
Charles says, hi, Ben/Nathan. Thank you for the unique insights you've been sharing via Demon Daily. To say they're helpful is an understatement. My question pertains to blind review, and I hope you can address this before the June exam, which I intend to take. Do you advocate blind reviewing all questions that the test taker marked as challenging, problematic during the practice test process prior to viewing one's score, that is, before even knowing which questions one missed, or is it acceptable to blind review after knowing which questions were missed? Thanks again. Keep up the good work. When I first read this, I thought Charles was going to ask, do you advocate blind reviewing all questions, period? And to that, I would say, hell no. But if you found a question to be problematic, or there's something that you were confused about it, I would encourage you to go back to it.
Yeah, I just don't like the idea that you're marking questions as challenging / problematic during your practice tests. I just don't like that. I never did that. It's not something that I teach people to do. It's not something that I want you doing during your official test. I want you doing your practice tests as closely as possible to how you're going to do your official test. So I just don't advocate for the flagging of questions. I certainly don't want you to flag it, finish the section, and go back to it, which many students do. Wrongly.
Sure.
I mean, I want
you shouldn't working... be finishing the section. The vast majority of people shouldn't be finishing their sections.
Right.
Period.
So no, unless you're scoring 175 on the regular, you should not be finishing your sections. You should be going slower. You should be more careful. You should be focusing on accuracy, never speed. You should be figuring them out. And so my thing is, some of them are going to be challenging. Some of them are going to be problematic. You're going to figure those ones out, though. And if you don't figure it out, you're going to miss it sometimes. And I hate this idea that you're going to, I feel like it's letting the perfect be the enemy of the good, where it's like, well, but I need to flag it because if I get it right accidentally, then I might not review it. Okay, so you're going to muddy up your whole practice process by flagging questions so that you can squeeze a little bit of extra value out of your review? I don't know. My philosophy is simpler, I think. Do a timed section, focus on one question at a time, do your best on every question, don't flag anything. Some of them are harder, some of them are easier, some of them take longer, some of them don't. Whatever. Do your best, guess on the ones at the end that you didn't have time for. Then when you review, blind review the ones you missed. And if you want to glance through your section, like you probably remember anyway. Oh yeah, I got that one right, but that one gave me, a hard time. I suppose if you want to flag it, it's not that big of a deal to flag it. I just know that human nature or LSAT student nature, I just know what kids do, which is they think that they're going to finish the section and go back, or they flag a question instead of doing the damn work to figure it out. Like you're 10 seconds away from understanding it, but you flag it, guess, and move on instead of just understanding it, figuring it out, like invest the additional 10 seconds to figure it out.
I think that's a good compromise, actually. So if we say don't flag it, but feel free to review those that you remember as challenging, it's going to be a small set of questions. And if it really was challenging, then it's one of those ones where you're like, ah, you're like, I can't seem to figure it out here. This is what I'm going to pick. And then I move on. And you're going to remember that question because it was that conundrum. Right?
Yeah. If you don't remember it, then it probably didn't give you that. You figured it out.
Yeah. And then you can, and then maybe you didn't, and maybe you got it right, and maybe you never come back to it. But look, you're missing, even if you're scoring well, you're missing two or three questions. Let's figure those out. Yeah.
Like the, we just have an abundance of questions. You know, we have 10,000 practice mm-hmm. questions to work on.
Mm-hmm.
And if you thoroughly review every one that you miss, then you're going to have plenty of questions to really dig deep on. The ones that you got right because of a half guess, okay, fine. But you did get it right, though, and I don't, whatever, it's fine. Like, could that question have taught you something? Yeah.
I think this becomes more applicable to people who are scoring very high. And at that point, they're also going to remember which questions gave them real shit.
So our policy is then, don't flag.
Don't flag. That's what you would do on the test. You would not flag.
Right. I just want you as much as possible to do your practice test and your official test the same, which is turn off the clock, do your best on every single question, guess at the 5-minute warning, guess on the remaining questions in the section, do one more question after that. Do your best, always. Do your best on every question. Then when you're done, you missed some. And the ones you missed, review those. If there's another couple that you remember gave you a hard time, but you got them right, review those as well.
Or, well, I think what he's asking is review those before he knows whether he got them right or wrong. And I do see value in that, but more value for people who are scoring really high, because they are the kind of folk who are looking for questions to figure out.
Right. So you're saying before you even score your test,
mm-hmm.
to go back and untimed try that question, you know,
like, yeah, think about, well, you, it more. You have no idea whether the answer you chose is right or wrong. And so that's an ideal place to really push yourself, because you haven't been given this big hint that, yeah, you got it right.
Yeah. I just don't care. I mean, Charles is saying, is it acceptable to blind review after knowing which questions were missed? I say, yes, it is acceptable.
Well, you're definitely going to do that because you have to review the ones you missed.
I just mean, it is totally fine in my book. If you want to do a timed section and immediately score it.
Yeah.
And then blind review the ones you missed. I'm totally fine with that. I don't think you need to, like, nope, I can't score myself. I have to go back and blind review before I even know whether I got it right or wrong. I just don't care. I just think it's kind of more efficient to say, all right, let's see how I did. Let's see which ones I missed. I'm going to definitely review the ones I missed. I mean, those ones are more important than the ones I got right. So I'm going to review the ones I missed and then maybe review another one or two where it was like, oh yeah, well, I did get that one right, but I know I wasn't 100% on that one. Let me look at it. Who gives a shit that you know you got it right? The point is, you need to understand it. This, we actually might be on the edge of something that's, like, kind of important here, because, like, I don't care whether you know, like, the whole, even the whole fetishization of blind review, right? It's like, well, once the answer key tells you that the answer is B, not D, that doesn't mean that you now can't properly review that question. Like, it's good to attempt the question again without knowing what the right answer is. I'm not saying blind review is bad.
Mm-hmm.
I think students they put it on such a pedestal that they then refuse, like, they don't think they can learn anything once they know what the correct answer is. And so what I'm saying is, you know, and this is going to be related to the class that I'm going to teach in a couple of days about the right way to blind review. It's just the right way to review, period. Which is, sure, fine. Attempt the question again without knowing what the answer key tells you the right answer is. But if you've missed the question, then you've picked a wrong answer. You know that that answer is wrong. But why is it wrong? What is it about that answer that's wrong? Why did you pick it? How are you going to avoid making that mistake next time? And then the right answer, like, whether you have looked at the answer key or not, the right answer is right for reasons. Like it is right on its own terms, regardless of what the answer key says. It's right. Mm-hmm. So why is it right? Do you really understand why it's right? You shouldn't need the answer key to tell you. Do you understand it? It's the right answer because it's right. So why is it right? But why didn't you pick it? And how are you going to avoid that mistake next time? And so, like, really thoroughly digging into those mistakes that you're making. Sure, I do like you doing the question again in the dark. Right? That's great if you can do the question again without knowing what the answer key says. But even once you do know what the answer key says, you still have those six questions that you have to answer in order to be sure that you really get it.
I totally agree with that. I guess the value I see in doing a question that you don't know whether you got right or wrong is that it forces people to grapple with their misunderstanding. I'm worried sure. about people. I'm worried about people who see the right answer. They start answering those questions that you ask all the time, which, by the way, I think we might need to reduce them. I'm worried that when people hear six questions, they start to forget like what those questions are, right? So we might need to pick like the two.
Well, it's why is the right answer right and why is the wrong answer wrong?
You need to remember that. It's easier to remember. I'm worried that people start to go, oh, what?
No, but there's follow-ups though. It's like, it's not just why is the right answer right? I mean, that is really critical. You do need to understand why is the right answer right.
Yep.
And you also really do need to understand why that wrong answer is wrong.
And then how you got yourself into that situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why those follow-up questions are like, well, but
I'm just saying we might need to leave it at those three so people don't forget all of them. Right.
Got
it's
it.
Like, why is the right answer right? Why is the wrong answer wrong? And how the heck did you make these mistakes? Maybe something right. like that.
Yeah.
But okay. So my point is that when someone really sits there and they don't have any timer ticking, so they know, you know, the test is over. And it's like, okay, you were stuck between these two answers. Can you resolve it now? And they realize that they can't, or they actually go through the process and make that breakthrough. I feel like they're less likely to fall into that trap of, oh, okay, I'm asking these questions. I do, okay, I can see why the right answer is right now. And when I push them on it, they can't actually explain it as much as they think they can. And so I'm trying to avoid that. And I think that when you really have to grapple with it, you're more receptive to the explanation that's given.
Yeah. Well, I agree. And that's why we have always encouraged people to do blind review. That's the whole point of blind review.
Yeah.
That said, once you have taken on this understanding of what the fucking purpose of this exercise is, right? Once you get why you're blind reviewing, then I think it shouldn't be devastating for you to know what the right answer is, because you should be able to go, yeah, I understand that. Okay, I get it, that is the correct answer. But the point is not to know what the answer key says. The point is to know why that's the answer. And you should be able to still review it properly, even though you know what the answer key says, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
well, I think that's maybe where we disagree, or that's the issue, and we need to figure that out, because I'm afraid that people understand that still get deceived.
They do.
They still think, oh, okay, yeah, ooh, I really got to figure this out. I really got to understand it. Yes, I do understand it. Okay, explain it to me. And as they start to, they stumble.
Yeah, that's just people who still haven't grappled. They still haven't really learned the first lesson. You know, they're not understanding that the right answer makes sense. The right answer answers the question. The wrong answer doesn't make sense. The wrong answer doesn't answer the question. That's independent of the answer key. It's not just that one answer is better than another. One of the answers is right. The other answers are wrong. I agree, Ben. We're on the same page. I mean,
yeah.
I guess I'm thinking about the student who is gonna really get it. Like the ones that we can really help are the ones who are gonna actually get it, right? Which is, oh, this test makes perfect sense. I just have to make sense of it. It's supposed to make sense. Because, like, you know, for you, Ben, or for me, it doesn't hurt our review process at all to know what the answer key says. When you know what the answer key says, you're like, I don't give a shit what the answer key says. I want to know why. And same thing for me, and same thing for our teachers, and same thing for, I would say, the vast majority of people who are ever going to score anything in the 170s. You've realized that it's not about the answer key. It's about why that's the right answer and why that's the wrong answer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think blind review is a great way of like forcing yourself to do the review the right way.
And to grapple with your attempt at trying to identify what's different about those answers and why one is 100% correct and the other is wrong. Yeah.
Yeah. How sure can you be before you even look at the answer key?
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, for that reason, I still do questions in class without knowing what the answer is.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I cheat just for expediency and I look at the answer key or turn on the answers as I'm teaching. But other times, you know, I intentionally don't because I want to show people what the real process looks like.
Yeah.
But I think that the ones who are going to really master it are going to be it's going to be like, well, you know, yeah, blind review is great, but it's like, it doesn't have to be this perfect process of blind review, right? Because if we go back to this actual email from Charles, it's like he's wanting to flag questions so that he can go blind review them, even if he gets them right. And it's like, well, but I don't really care that much, Charles. Like, you could probably let go of the flagging and just review the ones you missed. And then, yeah, if there's one or two other ones, you can go back and review those ones. And you know you got it right. But now you need to do that same work, though. Like, why was that right? And whatever other answer you were thinking about, why was that wrong?
I agree with that. I would say don't flag them. But I would say, when you get done with the section and you remember that one that you were grappling with, go to it right first before you even look at what's right or wrong. So you don't even know whether you got it right or wrong. And then, and that's the kind of thing where if you're remembering that, then you're also the kind of person who's going to benefit the most from that. For the vast majority of people, when they're starting out, look, they're getting half the section wrong or even a third of the section wrong. It's like, okay, stop. Just go figure out why you got those wrong. You have a lot of low-hanging fruit that you can just get by getting those understood.
Totally.
Yeah.
Email daily at lsatdemon.com if you'd like to ask us a question or share some LSAT or law school admissions news. Thanks for listening.